Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill.
Hello.
And today we continue our series on nuclear energy in Saskatchewan with two guests, Dan Lindsay, a member of the Planning Committee for the Committee for Future Generations that has been working since June of this year to ask our government to ban nuclear waste storage in the province. Welcome, Dan.
Good afternoon.
Our second guest is NDP MLA Sandra Morin. Sandra is the government critic on the environment, climate change, water critic, energy and conservation, and also the critic on the Uranium Development Partnership. We also invited the Honorable Rob Norris, who was a cabinet minister in the government of Saskatchewan, whose portfolio includes being responsible for Uranium Partnership development. We asked for someone from his office to join us, but as of yet, we've received no reply. So welcome, Sandra.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
Good to have you folks here.
Welcome, everybody. Yes. Welcome back, Dan.
This yes, is good to be back.
Becoming the Dan Show.
Yeah, it's like a third or fourth time now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but we felt it was important to do a follow-up and talk about the Uranium Development Project and the whole concept and the whole idea of nuclear energy, uranium development, the environmental issues, the health issues, and the perspective from the public, and as a follow-up to the Committee for Future Generations walk from Pine House to Regina, and the response that the various parties have to that. And we'll sort of maybe give it to Sandra. She'll be with us for the first half hour. And let her talk about the NDP perspective on this, and take it away, Sandra.
Well, thank you very much, Mona. I appreciate that. It was certainly a monumental effort that was undertaken and successfully carried out by the 7,000 Generations for walk opposed to nuclear development, nuclear waste storage, I should say, in the province of Saskatchewan. There were walkers that literally walked from Pine House to Regina, which, of course, is 850 kilometers, I believe, and they were joined along the way by numerous individuals. And along that walk, of course, they were able to talk about what their concerns are and educate the public along the way. And I think that's how I ended up getting a lot more people on board in terms of joining in on the walk. They were very, very clear about the fact that this wasn't a protest march, that this was an educational march. This was a way to express their concerns and educate the public of their concerns. And I thought that there was a significant message in that, because it was done in a very respectful way, it was done in a very peaceful way, and it was done in a way that was definitely out of love for Saskatchewan and out of love for the environment. And it was very moving, shall we say. It culminated, of course, with a bit of a get-together at Victoria Park on August 15th, and then also a bit of a rally at the legislature on August 16th at noon. The NDP candidates and MLAs who were able to join in various events and activities of the march, of the walk along the way, to show their support, first of all, for the walkers who were undertaking this monumental effort, and second of all, for the issue at hand, because the NDP has been in conjunction with them, a strong voice of being opposed to nuclear waste storage in Saskatchewan. So that was something that was very important for the walkers to be able to see and understand that there is an alternative to promoting the potential of nuclear waste storage in the province of Saskatchewan. And also the NDP convention in March, as recent as March of this year, we had undertaken a new policy review for the party, because it had been a number of years since this was done, obviously since the NDP had been in government for 16 years. So it was an important process to take place, and part of that policy review was also the issue of nuclear waste storage. And Mona, if I may, I'll just read what the document says. The document says, just so that everybody has the actual wording, the document says the policy is to refuse the establishment of a radioactive waste dump due to the significant long-term environmental concerns, including irreversible groundwater contamination, as well prohibit the transportation of radioactive waste within our province. This was something very, very important for the walkers to know, that there is an alternative to what might be touted currently by the current administration. So,
and if I can just interject here, this policy was ratified at the convention before any of us up north were aware of NUMO even being in our backyard.
And NUMO,
that's true.
NUMO meaning Nuclear Waste Management
Organization. Looking for a place again, 20 years after 91, when they were kicked out of the province, out of Meadow Lake area, to put a nuclear waste dump. So, you know, the NDP's position on this, it predates our interest as a committee of future generations, because we didn't find out about this until it was in May.
Well, perhaps I should expand on that, too. This is a policy that was ratified at the NDP convention in March, but it has been the position of the NDP caucus. As I said, we had been in government for 16 years. It was the position of the NDP caucus as well prior to the ratification of this within the policy document. So this is an ongoing position. This isn't a new position by any means.
Yeah, no, it's actually years old.
Yes. Yeah.
But it was nice to see it solidified yet again in the policy document under the new policy review that had just been undertaken. So that was something that was very important for the walkers along the way.
How does this end up being a human rights issue?
Well, that's let me go into the Aboriginal community.
Yes.
Because one of the parts that they want to do is you know, it goes back to the paternalistic and the colonization of people again. We haven't learned, obviously, in Canada, where first they want to make it's an issue for the north. They want to divide Saskatchewan. This is a northern issue. And then we'll divide it even further. This is only for First Nation and Métis people. And, in fact, at the Pine House forum, where I was the keynote speaker, the fellow that's promoting for Pine House, the NUMO, it was just very mysteriously 3 days before the Pine House Forum, there's a sign on the door declaring him now the leader of the Métis local. And even in that talk, he came out and said where the lawyers from Cameco and other decisions are supporting their bid for the Métis land use rights. So this is multi-layered. So this isn't an issue. It's all about colonization. So you have a system, you might say, where you've impoverished an indigenous population, and you keep them in poverty because that's the best way to control people, and then you hand out, you know, you dangle a little stick with some money on there. And when you're starving to death, and when your children are dying from various different causes, it's really easy to just grab those dollars thinking it's going to solve something. So this is, I think, this is the worst form of colonization and oppression. You know, people, they look at me, I said, I liked it back in the 1800s, like in the United States, because their policy was the only good Indian was a dead Indian. Well, we had an even playing field. We had an even understanding. If you were caught out on the prairies by the cavalry, we know what the results were going to be. Here, it's much more deceptive and underlying, and that's why I say it's more sinister. It's not even out front. It's not open. It's
subtle.
Very, very subtle.
But still effective.
And very effective. Mm-hmm. And it helps to divide the communities even further.
Right.
But you have to mention, there is no jobs in this. Very, very few jobs.
one of the things that that I'm aware of is that when the walkers decided to do this, when you were with the planning committee decided to make this walk, one of the things I was very acutely aware of was there was a consistency in the message from the walkers. And Sandra, you may be able to speak to this as well, about this not just being a northern issue and mm-hmm. not just being a First Nations issue, but being a whole provincial issue. It's not just about the north. And you know, when I think about, and going back to my question about, you know, how does human rights come into play here, we're also talking about environmental issues, right? And you might be able to speak to that, Sandra, in terms of the, you know, your party's perspective on this.
Sure. The walkers absolutely were very, very, very clear that this is not just a northern issue, that this is a Saskatchewan people's issue. This is a Saskatchewan issue. And wanted to stress that numerous times, that this is a Saskatchewan issue. And so when you look at the various concerns that are laid out, I mean, obviously Dan articulated one of them just now,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And very, very strongly. But I mean, certainly there are the environmental concerns that come with this. As many have said in the past, if this was something that was such a lucrative proposition, shall we say, then perhaps where the rods are being stored currently, which is Ontario and a few other provinces that do have nuclear energy, perhaps that would be something that they might want to undertake as well. And then there's the argument, of course, as to what is the best type of rock formation to have it stored in, again, there are those possibilities and elsewhere, and those other provinces, undertake these things in a more aggressive manner on other areas. So why wouldn't they be undertaking this particular opportunity, if one wants to call it that, as well? So there are those issues, and certainly there's the issue when we speak to human rights. I mean, certainly there's the issue of water. I mean, water is absolutely the most basic concern that we all have in terms of the availability and the quality of water, and in some cases it's even the affordability of water, as we've seen in this province even recently. As one of my critic portfolios, I'm also responsible for water, and there are a number of small communities in Saskatchewan mm-hmm. who are not able to pay the financial burden that it is now costing for proper water treatment plants and such, because there is a number of contaminants in our soils, such as arsenic and such, that need to be addressed in terms of drinking water. And I've had to rise in legislature, and in some cases on a daily basis in legislature, to read petitions on behalf of some of these smaller communities who are financially crippled because of the burden of having to pay for the water treatment plants that they have to install. And in one case, for instance, in Duck Lake, I mean, the water bills were over $200 a month.
Holy
upwards.
Cow.
And so we saw senior citizens having to potentially have a move out of the community, or single parents, or people who are on a lower income, because can you imagine if you would tell the residents of Regina that your water bill is going to be increased threefold, fourfold, if not more?
There would be a riot.
I would say so.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Water is such a critical component right. of the whole question of nuclear waste storage, about the potential contamination of water. Yeah.
Right. And Dan. I forgot my question. there's a lot swimming around in my head here. You talked about division, about the divide and conquer attitude here. But actually, during the course of the walk and during the course of the planning, there were people who were farmers who were also contacting your organization and your agency about this, that this is a problem for farmers as well. So it's not
exactly
just about drinking water for humans.
And you look at the people that mm-hmm. came out on the walk to support the walk by signing the petition, like any politician, was just, they were drooling with envy. We were hosted by a Mennonite community. We were hosted by First Nation community, Métis community. The Lions Club in one town hosted us and, did up a meal and gave us a place.
You had mayors.
We had mayors. Yeah. We had chiefs. We had every religious, right. every different type of religious organization were hosting us. So, like, we every type of person that lives in Saskatchewan at one time or another came out in support of the walk, you know, and signed the petition and took petitions home with them, you know, and so... We can't, that was the first thing, was to get rid of the division, because that's what NOMO does. They come in to do the division. They give some people some money, they don't give other people money, and they operate in the dark. The whole purpose of the walk, Waskan, wake up Saskatchewan. All it was, if you go back to like the 17th century, they had the town crier that walked through the town ringing the bell and read out the news for the day. That was our job. That was our only job, was to go from Pinehouse to Regina saying, wake up Saskatchewan. Because all this started in 2009, and it's been done in secret. It's been hidden by the SAS party and by, you know, from the citizens of Saskatchewan. You know, we talked earlier about the MOU, memo of understanding, with the new one that came out with Attachie. Well, the one with Bruce Power, when they came out with it, that was signed without the knowledge of people of Saskatchewan. Then it was announced.
It was prior to the Uranium Development Partnership meetings, that public meetings that were being held around the province. The public meetings with the Uranium Development Partnership took place after the memorandum had been signed.
It had already been signed.
Yeah.
And then when they came out and the people said no, so they stepped back from it. And I have to repeat what I said at the ledger when we had the rally. Is it's a real simple question, and we're not asking, and we're not even asking, we're demanding. And when you talk about human rights, it's my human right, and it's my right as a voter in this province. I want an answer to a question. I've asked the NDP, and they've answered it. I've asked the SAS party, and they, like this show, do not respond. But they respond through their actions, because I think silence speaks louder than words. And it's not what people say, it's what they don't say. And it's really simple. Do you support and will you bring in a nuclear waste dump in Saskatchewan? And we don't need to go off on any tirade of talks, or we need studies, or all the studies have been done, all the reports are in. It's a simple yes or no question. And that's all the response that the people of Saskatchewan need to hear. Yes or no. There's no ands, ifs, buts, or whatever involved. It's just very simple. That's a question, a simple answer, and we still don't get it. But if you go under like the UDP, and that they recommend, and this is, you know, that's why I'm thankful that these announcements are coming out now, because it's proving where they want to go. And they were recommended that we start enriching uranium, build nuclear power plants, create a nuclear waste dump, and research plutonium fuel reprocessing. And that would open us up, regardless of what anybody says, if we open up this nuclear waste storage, it is still a front for nuclear waste reprocessing, and we would end up with all the nuclear waste basically in the free world coming to Saskatchewan, because they have to have it stored in one place so they can build this multi-billion dollar factory to do the reprocessing. And that might take 5, 10, 20 years before that all happens, 30 years. But once it does, we're done. There will be no boomtown in anywhere. Who wants to live in a province that is...
But it'll create jobs, won't it?
I don't... What jobs is it going to create? That's a couple of building jobs? That's what I say. NOMO will say, it's guaranteed safe for 100,000 years. We've asked NOMO. I want to know. Guarantee me how many jobs it's going to create. Guarantee me the length of those jobs. Guarantee me the wages of those jobs. Guarantee me, and silence, but they can guarantee the safety for 100,000 years, and I don't even think human beings have walked on the face of the earth that long. So it's all really kind of fishy when you look at it really clearly.
Do you see this as an election issue at all, either one of you?
Well, I certainly anticipate some questions arising around the subject, no question about it. When one is out door knocking already in terms of just getting out and about in the constituency, there are those constituents who are well aware of what's going on, are paying attention, and want to have some more information. So I think that this will be certainly something that will arise throughout the election. I'm not sure, you know, if it'll be anything other than that.
I kind of doubt it's going to be a hot-button issue because the Premier has already come out and said earlier this year that they were not interested in the reprocessing or storage of nuclear waste at this time.
Yeah. There's always that little caveat. If you recall, in the 2003 election, the SAS party leader at the time was Elwin Hermanson, and when asked the question about whether or not they were going to privatize the Crown corporations, he kept saying that he has no plans to do so. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't unequivocally say that he would not privatize the Crowns. He just said that he kept saying he had no plans. And of course, that leaves a door wide open for making plans. So when you say at this time,
that certainly says that
the door is wide open to potentially doing so at any time we change our mind in the future.
Yeah, and that's why our question is really simple. It's a yes or no answer. We don't want to hear anything else. Yes or no.
As we all know, semantics mean everything. At this time or have no plans,
After the election.
Simply allow them to think that they can shut the door at the moment, but what it is leaving the window wide open.
And it's really funny because I had to laugh when I was reading the newspaper about the research at the University of Saskatchewan because, you know, it was clearly stated that the people of Saskatchewan did not want a nuclear reactor. Okay, so let's try researching into small nuclear reactor. What is that? What is that? You know, radiation is radiation. It doesn't matter big or small, it's radiation. And nuclear waste comes from reactors. So now we're going to be adding more fuel to the fire if we fire up nuclear reactors here.
Well, and one should also note that that wasn't even part of the uranium development partnership process. There was no discussion about small reactors in the process. So this actually, this recommendation falls outside of the process that took place around the province of Saskatchewan. I attended as many of those meetings as I could around the province, and like I said, it wasn't part of the mandate of discussion, and it didn't come up in discussion.
But that goes back to, you know, that's why, you know, they just, you know, the SAS party are so disdainful of the public. You know, they say, oh, well, they said no to nuclear reactors, but let's try to get them, we'll sell them small reactors. It's like, come on, who are they trying to kid?
It sounds to me like the battle is going to have to start all over again because this was a battle that the citizens of Saskatchewan fought years ago to prevent nuclear power plants from being developed in Saskatchewan. Well, and it sounds like it's going to have to start all over again.
We have a teaching in the Aboriginal community, and that, you know, when God created people and he put people on the earth, you know, on Turtle Island, he gave each of those people the things that they needed to thrive on. And I guess it was up to people to realize what we have and, you know, use that to thrive on. We don't have mountains, we don't have oceans, we don't have, you know, the big raging rivers where they have tidal dams and things like that. But what we do have, we have unobstructed sunlight, and we have these prairie winds. And, you know, and with the NDP, their part of their policy is, and it has been for years, is to go, and it's a lofty goal, but, you know, set the goal high so we can get as high as we can, is to have renewable resources by 2025, 50%.
Right.
For Canada, we are so far behind the rest of the world. Saskatchewan should be the world leader, and at research in our universities into solar power, into wind power. That's what God gave us. He gave us these gifts, and those things are free, and we could be not just researching it and developing it. We can be having factories where this stuff is being made and shipped out around the world. In Germany, over 500,000 jobs, which is half the population of Saskatchewan, work in that field.
I just read something recently about a solar power plant that was producing solar energy panels going under in Canada.
Yeah, that was in Ontario, unfortunately.
Yeah. What have we got left, Jim? A minute or two?
Yeah, about a minute 45.
Okay. Yeah, that's really unfortunate, actually, because as Dan said, I mean, I my relatives are all in Germany.
Right.
And so I travel there, you know, as often as I can to see them, obviously. And it's amazing the industry that has been created in Germany around renewables.
Right.
So it's something that but it didn't happen by accident. Mm-hmm. It was promoted and supported by the governments at the time and going forward actually. So it's something that has to be mandated as in a sense and supported, shall we say. Yeah.
And I have to say that, and we put all these tax cuts and corporate tax cuts into oil and gas and nuclear.
We have 1 second left.
You know, we could be
putting, 1 minute. Okay.
We could be putting some of this money into this type of research, which is the future, where we're going to end up anyways. Even the gas companies, the oil companies have said, eventually we're going to have to go there because the gas is, you know, and oil's running out.
Well, and the sad part is that the plan was already well underway under the NDP in the previous administration. In the spring of 2007, there was an amazingly great plan that was laid out in terms of renewables for the province. And there was, we were leading in wind energy in Canada at the time. We are certainly not leading in wind energy anymore. This government has been in government for 4 years now, and we've seen very little done on any on the front of renewables, let alone the issue of climate change. That would be another show altogether.
We can do that. And I want to thank Sandra Morin, NDP critic, for the Iranian Development Partnership, water, climate change, environment. Perfect guest to have on our show today. Thank Sandra, thank you much for so much for joining us. And we would like to mention again that we did invite someone from the Saskatchewan Party to join us today for this conversation, for their perspective on these issues. And we have not yet heard from anybody. We hope that we might in the future and continue this conversation. So thank you so much for joining us. Sandra's going to be leaving us.
Thank you for the invitation.
The break. You're welcome back anytime. And Dan's going to stick around, and we'll come back after the break and have more conversation about the results of the Walk from Pine House and the Committee for Future Generations.
Thank you very much.
Maybe think about power. like it or not. Gotta work for Earth for what it's worth, 'cause it's the only Earth we got. Shut 'em down. That's the only way to keep them down.
All right, we're back, and that was a guy by the name of Gil Scott Heron, and his little tune there is Shut 'Em Down, talking about nuclear power. So there you go.
So we're back on human.
Oh, just I got to turn your mic on.
Okay.
There, now you're on, sorry.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Mona Hill with Jim Hutchings. We're back on Human Rights Radio, and if you were with us during the first half of the show, you were able to enjoy Sandra Morin, NDP critic for the environment, climate change, water, Office of Energy and Conservation, and the Uranium Development Partnership program. And if you weren't here, we also invited someone from the South Party, from Rob Norris's office, and unfortunately we haven't heard from them yet. But we are going to continue the show with Dan Lindsay. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you'll know that Dan has been with us a number of times in the past as a member of the Committee for Future Generations. Dan was in on the planning for the walk from Pine House to Regina. And we thought we would do a follow-up on the show with Dan and talk about what's happened since the walk. Give us a little bit of information. Maybe a picture, paint us a picture of what the walk was like, what you encountered, and the response from the government since you've got back. So take it away, Dan.
Well, yeah, the walk. Well, I didn't get to do the whole walk. I went up to, as you know, I went up to, and you came with me.
I was asked to come as a guest to talk about it from a human rights perspective.
Yeah, in Pine House, and then the walk started the next day, but I had to come back to Regina for work. And then I joined in actually full-time in Saskatoon and came to Regina. But the walk, when you look at this, it was just something really beautiful, and I don't know if that sounds kind of flaky, that, you know, I'm not a flaky type guy, but it was beautiful, because when the core group of 10 walkers left Pine House, they had $400. That was it.
And wasn't there problems with the not the donations, but with accessing the account?
Oh, no, yeah, the PayPal thing.
The night before the walk started, there was
a bunch of donations in PayPal, and that all fell apart. And but, you know, it was $400, and you had all these a couple of vehicles, and now it's legendary in Saskatchewan history is the pony. The truck that... shouldn't even have made it to Meadow Lake, let alone Regina and back. And we built a big plywood box on the back with signs and that to put all our gear in. And it went all the way there and back. And it pulled a trailer, a little trailer, so people had a place to sleep and go to the bathroom and stuff on the road. So, yeah, that was pretty incredible, almost bordering on divine intervention that thing made it to Regina and back. Max had drawn brown spots on it. It was a white old Ford pickup truck to make it look like a painted
war pony.
Yeah, the war pony.
Yeah.
The walk, you know, it was because the whole thing about it, and that was the other thing that makes it beautiful, is nobody involved had ever been involved in anything like this before. You know, I think most people never even got out and protested anything before. Had no idea of the logistics, no idea of the cost, no idea of the actual personal price that you're going to have to pay to do these things and actually walk and, you know, get along. And, you know, people are out there, you know, going a couple of days without showers and setting up camps and breaking camps and being hosted. So, you know, there was times it was pretty stressful. And we had, you know, on the part that I was there, you know, all of us, you know, had our meetings, and we had circles in the morning to get going. So the fact that we got all the way to Regina and were successful in our mission was what we needed to do. And anyways, yeah.
No, we have distractions here.
Yeah, distraction
in the office.
Here.
Dan will get back to you.
So, yeah. But yeah, no, the walk was good, and we achieved what we needed to achieve. And that was it, because we had so many people coming on board, so much support from other organizations, and you know, like Green, Clean Saskatchewan comes to mind. And those that I don't mention, please forgive me, because there's just so many. That came together to make things happen, like when we did the benefit concert in PA and Saskatoon.
Oh, yeah.
And Regina.
People had benefit concerts for you as you were walking,
and people coming out, and
they were meeting you outside on the highway,
and then people would walk, and we knew that, you know, I knew that, because I've been kind of myself, you know, telling the group that, you know, you were going to have a core group, you know, 5 miles outside of town, you might get a bunch of people join you, walk into town, and then you get 5 miles outside of town, and then you're on your own until the next town. So, and that was good, and that worked out really well that way. But the support from all the different people in the province was very overwhelming. The petitions going out and getting signed, and you know, just to leak a little bit, you know, insider information.
What was the petition about?
The petition. And that in itself
just
was
for those who haven't heard the
show
before.
You see, that was an ordeal in itself. We said, well,
yes,
we got to get a petition. So, you know, I think Debbie or Max, somebody wrote up a petition, and okay, well, let's go. We're going to get signed, you know, get it signed up. Then we discovered that the province of Saskatchewan, when you are actually signing a petition and you are requesting from the government of Saskatchewan a change or a creation of legislation, there is a very specific format that you have to follow. You know, I found out that, you know, like electronic petitions aren't legal. Lots of things, and it's almost like they set it up so you fail. So it has to be worded exactly like, I don't have one with me, but it says like we in the prayer that follows.
They have a special format.
Yeah, and it has to be done word by word,
right.
And even down to the point where it says print your name, print your address and signature. If you write your name where it says print,
they won't count.
Though they're not counted, they're called ruled out of order. So we started off with this one petition, and then we, you know, found out, you know, you had to have this other one. So there was like two or three drafts.
It was like trial by fire, Dan.
Everything was trial by fire, trial by error, and that's why the whole thing was beautiful, because it all happened. It all came apart, and manifest itself here in Regina. So. And we were hoping, you know, to get in maybe on a weekend, you know, when we did the march, it was, you know, 12 o'clock during noon on a work day. But it is what it is, and that's how, you know, we couldn't change. So we couldn't walk any faster. It was just the way the walk went. And, and it was just a really wonderful thing. But now the work begins. You know, I think there's a lot of people thought, well, we're just going to do this walk, and, it's, you know, it's going to happen, you know. And it's like if you look at Manitoba, there was some little differences, but it basically took them 15 years working at it when they actually wanted to bring in it was 5 years to get the legislation brought in. And even today, you know, I was talking to some politicians, if we were to say, okay, I'm introducing this legislation in the House, you know, just a normal piece of legislation, that takes 18 to 20 months before it actually comes on the book. So you're looking at a year and a half, 2 years before it, you know, if we were to all, you know, steam ahead to go ahead and do it right now. So there is, you know, time and patience needed. But at the same time, you know, NOMO's up there chipping away and buying people off. And, you know, so there's a big concern that we're running out of time. We have to, you know, do it, you know, right now. And then there's some of us sitting back saying, well, we got to, you know, because, you know, like it or not, it's a war. You know, as far as I'm concerned, this is a war. And I'm not in it to win a battle or two. I'm in it to win a war. Our goal is to bring legislation. And we're not asking for anything that other parts of Canada already have. Manitoba has banned nuclear waste storage. In British Columbia, you can't even pick up a rock and sample it to see if it's uranium. They didn't just ban storage. They've banned mining. They've banned exploration. Everything around uranium is totally banned in BC. Quebec, because they're full of nuclear rods, they have nuclear reactors, they can't ban it because they have it. But what they've done is they've banned the importation. So they're not going to take Ontario's nuclear waste, and they're not going to take New Brunswick's nuclear waste. They're going to deal with their own waste. Mm-hmm. And this is what it comes down to. You have to deal with your own waste. Why ship it to Saskatchewan? Well, that's an easy question, because they think we're stupid. They think we're asleep. They think we're blind. and they're going to stick it in the far north where basically it's only Aboriginal people living. And we can buy them off for a couple of million bucks here and there with and a promise of jobs. And that's not going over because we learned that from the uranium mines. You promised us all these jobs. You promised us all the reserves and all the streets were going to be paved. It's been 60 years and that hasn't happened. Sure, there's some jobs and they do help the economy. But it's not like what they promised. It's far from what they promised. You know, they still got planes flying in people from Saskatoon and PA, you know. And it was only the NDP that made sure and ensured that a certain percentage of workers would be hired out of the north. It was the NDP that insisted that that get written in when they did that. So it's really all smoke and mirrors, and this stuff is just totally deadly. This is common sense. This isn't about First Nation, Métis, non-native farmer, urban living person. It's about all people because that water connects us all.
Well, and that's another issue. I mean, we were talking earlier about the environmental impact of this, if it wasn't any kind of an accident or a leakage or anything. And it's not even just a Saskatchewan issue if you take it even further, because
that's
our
right.
water
it's
is all connected.
It's a Canadian
connected
issue.
To Alberta, it's
no,
connected
it,
to Manitoba.
It's totally Canadian issue,
yeah.
Because you'd have to truck, and basically when we say truck, it's going to be railed part of the way and then truck the rest of the way. But New Brunswick, where's that on your map?
Yeah.
Is that the Atlantic Ocean? Yeah, so it's going to be coming from New Brunswick. It's going to be coming from Ontario, and it's going to be coming through Saskatchewan to get to the north. And not only that, it's very clear under NAFTA, once that starts, we will then have to take the United States nuclear waste, which makes our nuclear waste of 2 million bundles. That's if you don't produce anymore, it's 2 million. You have to remember, they've already put in an application for 4 more nuclear reactors with the ideally they know they're going to build 2 more. And if we stop producing all of this nuclear waste, it's 2 million. So this is an ongoing thing. This is the way they talk, the language they use. Like they always do a thing, like if you drill a hole and you hit a pocket of, you know, uranium, you get the gas that comes out, radon gas. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, but radon gas, that dissipates in 72 hours. Well, it's true. In 3 days, it dissipates. But the hole is open, so every second, more gas is coming out, so it never really dissipates. The gas that was released this minute will dissipate in 72 hours from this minute, but it will be replaced by the gas that was released the next minute, and the next minute, and the next minute. So you always have the gas. You know, so that you got to really, you know, listen to them when they speak, because they're so full of it. If it wasn't so sad and so scary and so frightening, it would be laughable, you know. So the walk did its. We were successful. The whole point of the walk was to go through, just like I said earlier about the town criers, you know, screaming, mm-hmm. "Wake up, wake up, wake up!" So people are waking up. The message is getting out of there, and so far with our petition, we're well over 7,000. And we haven't even hit the universities yet.
Okay.
And that's
right.
All gearing up for the university. Right. So I think I'm hoping this is going to be the biggest petition that this province has ever seen. And we have dozens and dozens and dozens of other people out there that haven't sent their petitions in. And, you know, the goal is when somebody took a petition, you know, they were trying to find, you know, we called it sponsor kilometer, get 100 signatures. So 850 times 100. That's kind of our goal, and I know that's lofty. That's almost like everybody in Saskatchewan. And we're not going to get that, but we are getting a huge, huge number. And now, actually, we're now getting more response on the petition now that the walk is over, and now some of these issues are hitting the newspapers. Now it's even heating up even more.
There has been a lot of media
yes.
on this, particularly in the newspapers, I've noticed.
Yeah, well, that's why they do these things, like when they first announce, and I just laugh, you know, in a sad way. When it first came out, you know, the partnership there with the University of Saskatchewan and Attachie, I said, oh, you know, into, you know, nuclear medicine and, you know, something for one of their little machine gizmos. And then the next time they announced it, they keep adding to it. And then it came out, oh, yes, it was, oh, and small nuclear reactors. And then the third time they announced it, it was like,
small nuclear reactors and, oh, yeah, uranium extraction, right? And they just do this over time because, you know, the rule of thumb is the election is in November. You know, it's still 2 months away. We're not even, we're a month away before dropping the writ. And then you got your 30-day election. Is you put that out there in the newspaper back in the summer when everybody's on holiday, so nobody even knows it happened, no, it was there, and you're going to forget about it come the election. So our job now is to make sure that people don't forget about it come the election. And, you know, there's many of us that are very, very passionate on this issue. But, you know, I've come and I've sat here, you know, with, you know, on a housing and homelessness. That's even more of an issue now than when I was here talking about it. So there's lots of issues out there that are affecting people. So this isn't going to be the, you know, the big bass drum of the election because people are now hurting more financially than ever before. So it's just one of many, many things that this election should be addressing. And we got to stick to the issues. We really got to push the issues. So, and this one's really important. You know, because it once it comes, we're toast, and we even have it in those flip charts we talked about before.
Right.
With NOMO,
you had found flip charts that that were left behind by the
from
nuclear
a NOMO
waste
meeting with the elders up in Pinehouse, and they conveniently threw all their flip charts in the garbage, and somebody picked them all out, and we have them now. Where they even said in there one of their good points was the United States of America has agreed to buy all nuclear waste. Well, of course they have, because this is the stuff that, you know, they're so terrified of Al-Qaeda and terrorists. This is what you make dirty bombs out of. And they've been doing it when the Soviet Union broke apart and Ukraine, they were in the market of buying up any nuclear anything at the time because it's the fear of it getting into the wrong hands. So that even proves that there is a plan to
extract
to do the nuclear reprocessing.
Well, and I think that's an important factor to take note of, is that when this issue was being talked about publicly outside of your committee, when you started this whole movement, it the concept of nuclear waste storage, and that was the end of it. The tipping point became, though, when I think it was Dr. Jim Harding was talking about, this isn't just about storage. This is also about re-extraction and using.
Well, that was mine, actually.
Jim had talked about that as well.
He's been doing this for years.
Yeah,
right?
But I think the general public perception is, they're just going to store it up there in the rocks.
But that's a good point, because I'm not a nuclear physicist, and I'm not a professor, and I'm not an environmentalist, and I'm not anybody that, you know, has been involved in this anti-nuclear movement at all until I heard this. I'm just Joe Q. Citizen with a little tiny brain, who said, well, if we're having nuclear waste storage, it's all about nuclear. I came to the conclusion without reading any, because I never read anybody's stuff, Jim's or anything, that this is about reprocessing. It just goes hand in hand. So you're totally, I'm just hoping the rest of the people wake up, because that's what it's about. The nuclear waste storage is a front. That's not what this is about. It's about nuclear waste processing. That's why the beauty of our legislation, like Manitoba, like British Columbia, like the United States of America, and many other countries around the world, is to ban the nuclear waste storage. If you ban the nuclear waste storage, you cannot have nuclear waste processing. So you kill, two birds with one stone. So that's kind of the beauty. That's why we don't have to really talk about that, because we're just focused on banning the storage. And we have to draw the connection between everything. They talk about the UDP, and what it, you know, that is, as far as I'm concerned, criminal.
What's the UDP again?
The Uranium Development Partnership, and that's the recommendation that the Wall government is following to a T. It's coming out in the media now. You know, the chairman of the board was the head of finance and research for the University of Saskatchewan. Oh boy, they just got $10 million. Who else sat on that board? Cameco, Areva, all the nuclear, Bruce Power. Who owns Bruce Power? Cameco. Even the unionized employees of Bruce Power, the Canadian Nuclear Workers Union, all their pension money, they're owners of Bruce Power. So talk about conflict of interest and one-sided dealings. This is like, You know, I think, you know, the United States government nail Microsoft to the wall for that type of behavior? You know, like, this is like, you know, may not be out there criminal, but it is criminal because they're, you know, the people are going to get hurt. And then we look at this one with Hitachi. Hitachi's connected to a Savannah Research Corporation in South Carolina. And another one of their companies is all about nuclear arms. So, and that's the whole thing about nuclear waste reprocessing. There's only one thing to do is you remove the plutonium from the rods. Well, plutonium is only used for two things. Make nuclear bombs or to make MOX fuel for nuclear reactors. And it was just like 3 days ago it was announced in the United States a renewable, sustainable power overtook nuclear power for the first time. And it wasn't just a one-time thing because some of the reactors were shut down for refueling and that, like they do twice a year. It's been steadily growing and growing and growing. So it is all connected to many, many different things, but we cannot fight 20 different things. We can only fight one thing. And we can fight something that is very doable. And, you know, they say, come to Saskatchewan, they're talking about the environment. They're saying, well, it's the Canadian Shield. Well, if you look on your map, I actually even had a map of where they're looking in English River about sites of reserve land in their territory where they could put this. It's like 100 kilometers from the very edge of the Precambrian Shield. We're at the edge of it. We're the end. So if you're thinking, you know, even when we make an arrow, we take our stone and our flint and you chip the edge, and it chips off. So let's drill big holes half a kilometer into the ground. If you want safety in the environment, you want to go to the center. The center is where it comes from, Ontario and Quebec.
But they won't allow it.
But they won't allow it. New Brunswick won't allow it either. And because right. And that Canadian Shield goes, you know, around Hudson Bay and it comes down. We are at the very edge of it. We're literally 100 or some kilometers from the edge of that shield. So that's a pretty dumb place to put. You know, you do anything, you hit it on the edge. You know, when you're splitting wood, you hit it on the edge, it splits off. So let's drill some, because it's undisturbed bedrock. Well, you start drilling holes and tunneling, just like they found in Yucca Mountain. Well, you've now disturbed it. And so it's a very desperate attempt by the nuclear industry to find a place to deal with this stuff.
So what's the future now for the Committee for Future Generations? In 1 minute, Dan.
Well, we just got to keep at it. We got to get people out there and got to get people out there to vote. That's a big one. If you don't vote and you wake up with a nuclear reactor in your backyard and waste coming down your river.
And then perhaps people who get door knockers from the different parties might want to bring this up.
Well, what I is think, your position? And even though, you know, I'm supporting the NDP, you know, and because it has been in their policy for numerous years now, I think this is a thing, you know, and I was really inspired with the passing of Jack, is because everyone I talked to, you know, like in the Green Party and things like that, they were basically, most of them are disenfranchised NDPers. And I think we have to unite the left. We have to for this election for sure, because it's the only way that we can stop the wall government from bringing this stuff in.
And we are hoping to hear from our Saskatchewan government and on this issue in the near future. So we're going to wrap up today's show and thank Dan very much for being on the show, and come back again next week to Human Rights Radio. Thanks for being here, Dan.
Thank you so much.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Every day and every moment and every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, help just one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."